Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, it's Thursday, so you know we are doing college football on this very podcast, the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I'm joined, as I am every Thursday night, by my good friend, fellow University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green, down there in Decatur, Georgia. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. I know it's such an inside joke that I feel like I can't even say it, but every time you say it's Thursday, it reminds me of the Georgia State thing every time. Just like, every day is Thursday. Let's go Thurs. But I'm just alienating. I'm alienating the entire audience because no one even knows that joke.
Well, I mean, I think there are some people that know that joke. I just wonder how many Georgia State students even know that joke.
That's
or know that it was Thursday and that kind of thing.
Okay, every day is Thursday down. I don't know, what do they call it? Like down the flats, like Georgia Tech. Do they call it? Do they have a name like that for Georgia State? I don't even know. Down.
You're asking the wrong.
We'll get back to you on that one.
Do some deep dive in your week. I mean, you were the guy who worked at the College Football Hall of Fame. You should be more attuned to what the college football hotbed that is Georgia State in Panthersville is calling their football facility.
That's true. The Tennessee Vol fans should know all about the powerhouse that is Georgia State Panthers.
Was that necessary?
Hey, you're always taking jabs, man. I gotta get them in where I can.
When have I ever taking what you consider a jab on this very podcast? Oh. That sounds extremely out of character.
Always. Every time UGA, Kirby Smart, whenever you can throw that in my face.
Well, to be fair, I
just means more, you know?
It does just mean more. But also, you're a football school. Like, we're a baseball school. It's just prime. You can't hurt me right now. We're top five in the country going toe-to-toe with Arkansas. And then you look at your program down south, Foley Field, where friend of the pod, Logan Booker, announced the full capacity experience back at Georgia this week in the first one in like 2 years. Here is the thing. No one cares because your program stinks and you're not a top five program. That Lindsey Nelson was rocking last weekend.
It is crazy.
We have MLB talent everywhere with Dayton Moore's kid out there for Arkansas. Just pushing Arkansas, the number one college baseball team.
Well, and I feel like when you look at the rankings, Georgia's like consistently will be like in the top 20, and then they're like the 10th ranked team in the SEC. The SEC is just loaded in baseball. But I was going to say, are you going to give the listeners a little taste of that video you sent me celebrating that walk-off win by the Volunteers?
Or is... I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not even sure what I watched. That was those are some dance moves. I don't know if they were good or I don't even know what I witnessed, but I can't unsee it.
Did you show your lady?
Of course.
What did she say?
I think she was as dumbfounded as I was. I was wondering who's filming. Were you just filming that? Or you just had the camera set up for your reaction? Is that what was going on?
No, the lady was filming. The lady was filming. And it was because I was nervous. I was standing up, like, bobbing the night. That was it. And I was just like, I was rocking back and forth. I am someone, when I get nervous during a sporting event, I tend to get closer and closer to the TV, and I'll end up standing up.
Okay, I hear you there. You gotta I see, I'm the superstitious kind of fan. I go with whatever is working, you know. If it's not working, I gotta stand up. If it's not working, I gotta sit down. Like, I remember I was coming out of the bathroom, like, just kind of down the hall from, like, our living room, when Austin Riley hit that bomb against the Dodgers last year. I was like, all right, I'm watching the rest of the game right here. Like, I had to do that.
I need to clarify something on this podcast, Macrine. You're hyping up the SEC in college baseball, and the SEC runs college baseball. That is a definite. However, as of May 17th, 2021, per d1baseball.com, a very good college baseball website that you should keep track of if you're not already, lists the top 25. And this very top 25 features Arkansas, number one, Vanderbilt, number three, Tennessee, number four, Florida, number nine, Mississippi State, 10, Ole Miss, 13, South Carolina, 21, who we're playing this weekend. End of list.
Bulldogs not to be found, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, fair enough.
Mister, we're always in the top 25.
I didn't say it like that. I say, like, it's a respectable program, but they're still, like, lower half of the SEC. I thought they were ranked earlier this year, but college baseball is definitely not my expertise. I'll defer to you on that one.
Tony Vitello, just give him whatever he wants to be the Tennessee baseball coach for the foreseeable future, because there's been some chirping that Texas A&M is coming calling at the end of this season. So we'll see. But enjoy your full capacity for your just forgettable group of Bulldogs down there in Athens, Georgia. But let me know when you're back in that top 10 and you're actually competing for Omaha and stuff like that. Then we'll revisit the Georgia Bulldogs in this very podcast, Macrine.
Can we get a Peyton Manning little sound clip in there? A little Omaha action?
He actually threw out the first pitch last Friday.
Oh, is that right? Attendance.
Yeah, he needs to stop coming, because someone pointed out that, like, Tennessee never wins when he's around. Like, it's one of those weird things. If he's in the building at the football game, at a basketball game, at a baseball game, they never win. They lost Friday night with him there. He threw a great first pitch. Like, he had one of the better opening pitches I've ever seen.
If I was a troll of a rival fan base, I would say Tennessee didn't win when Peyton Manning was there to begin with.
Yikes.
Oh, man. Did I just go there?
Yikes.
Did I just go there? Peyton Manning, all-time great. All-time great, for sure.
Mm-hmm. We'll just move.
But I would never say that. If I was a fan of if I was a troll fan of another fan base, I might say something like that. But I would never say that.
Well, that's good. Thank you for being the better man. Well, let's get to some news. Some college football news. Gene Smith, the athletic director at Ohio State, getting a multi-year extension. Any thoughts on Gene Smith sticking around?
Yeah, no, he was the name that was kind of thrown around as maybe getting one of these commissioner jobs, like the Pac-12 commissioner or something. But I guess he's happy where he is. And honestly, I don't know why you'd want to leave if you're at Ohio State. Like, just stay, keep raking in the money, man. Like, I'm all for it. Ohio State sports seem to be in a pretty good position right now.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. legends whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Everyone's experienced the pain of dropped calls and internet outages, especially working remotely this last year. So here's the question. If you're the telco company, how do you help create better experiences for customers? Simple. ServiceNow digital workflows can help solve network problems faster and provide real-time status updates so customers aren't left in the dark. That's probably why ServiceNow workflows have helped telco companies see an increase in customer satisfaction. But proactive customer communication's only half the battle. With a single view of your back, middle, and front office operations, ServiceNow workflows also eliminate silos, keeping teams more in sync and more productive. With our scalable services, companies assure a better experience for both customers and employees on a single platform, the Now Platform. So how do you help provide a better network experience for customers? With ServiceNow for telecommunications to help streamline network operations. Whatever your business is facing, let's workflow it. ServiceNow.
In the Big Ten, I think, would just be in a better position if he was the Big Ten commissioner. Like, Kevin Warren's not a great early start for Kevin Warren.
Yeah, that seems like a more logical step, like Ohio State AD to Big Ten commissioner. The Pac-12, I just don't know why you'd want to associate yourself with that. Like, that's a tough job. And I feel like it's because of, like, the current perception of it, like, you're going to be under a lot of pressure to really improve things. And I'm not sure exactly what the commissioner is supposed to do. Like, these schools have to make the right coaching hires and everything like that. Like, I guess the commissioner comes in when it comes to things like TV deals and, you know, these 9 a.m. kickoffs. If I was the Pac-12 commissioner, that'd be one of the first things I got rid of.
I mean, the Pac-12, I think, is a much more difficult Power 5 job than a lot of college football fans give them credit for. I think two things can be true. Larry Scott did a very bad job and negotiated a very bad TV deal. But also, I think it's a tough job. And I think it's going to be really hard for them to catch up to the rest of the Power 5. That being said, George Klivyakov, I'm guessing I'm pronouncing that last name correctly, was announced out of nowhere, an out of nowhere name, because it looked like Oliver Luck had a real shot at that. And I think that actually would have been a really smart, shrewd hire by the Pac-12 to go Oliver Luck there. But no, they go Klivyakov, who came from MGM. It's one of those where I forgot who I was listening to. I think it was the Yahoo Sports College Football Show. And I think it was Pat Forty, or maybe it was Dan Wetzel, who said that this was another indication to the Pac-12 ADs that, like, we don't care about your schools and getting an AD in there, or a commissioner in there, rather, that is going to invest in all these different universities and figure out what works, what's helping, how they can get involved, and, like, how they can really invest in the actual schools themselves. But it's just more of, like, let's bring in somebody who made money promoting bites and stuff like that, who can promote our brand and make us money. Like, it was let's bring in a commissioner who we think can make us money and fix our TV contract situation, fix the eyeballs, that kind of stuff. And I just, it's not a good look. And I mean, that's not what Greg Sankey's about. Greg Sankey's the best commissioner in college sports right now, and it's not particularly close. But the ACC went out and did that. They got their own Greg Sankey. And I think he's going to be really interesting.
To be fair, like, what can you really point to, like, Greg Sankey, like, that he does, like, superior to other conference commissioners? You know what I mean? Like,
well, he's invested. He's measured. He actually cares about the school. He had the background where he worked his way up. It's not even like he's a local SEC guy. Like, he has done different things in the SEC before getting that thing. I don't know. I think he just paid his dues, basically, familiarizing himself with the role and what it takes to be a good commish. I don't know. Whenever I listen to Sankey and his leadership, I think he is someone that genuinely cares about the health of the conference. And I'm not sure the new Pac-12 commissioner cares about the health of the schools.
I mean, that's true. It's hard to say. It's just such a... It's such an interesting job that it's hard to have experience, right, with that kind of job. It's like you just kind of I've done X, Y, and Z, and maybe I'll be suited for this job. You know, obviously it would make sense if you get a former athletic director or something like that. But the Pac-12 is in such a position where like they just need more eyeballs on their product, and maybe a guy that's, you know, worked with MGM promoting fights, doing that sort of thing. Maybe he can just help get more eyeballs on the Pac-12. But I just don't know that a commissioner can really do that if we feel like consistently in football they have like one, maybe two good teams, or in basketball they had a really strong performance in the NCAA tournament this year, but even in recent years it seems like they're not getting as many teams in the tournament as they usually do. And that's just like, that's a whole huge level that I'm not sure the commissioner really has any control over.
Yeah. I don't know. I the Pac-12's in a tough spot, and it's not like the Pac-12 network is going to get resolved this year. So it's a long bet, but we'll see what happens there. Speaking of the SEC, though, $23 million for SEC schools for virus losses. Were you at all alarmed by that number?
Yeah, the $23 million didn't seem that crazy until you thought it's $23 million per school. You just have like just a $300 million just sitting in the safe back there. Like, hey, you guys, take a little something. It was a tough year. We'll just throw you a little something. Just $23 million per.
I mean, that's a wild figure.
It just means more, man. That's all I can say.
Yeah. It's also why schools, when they were talking, remember how I was like, this can be a tough year, like a lot of the idea. And then you have Will Muschamp getting a just ridiculous buyout this offseason.
That was the theory. Like, I feel like I heard a lot of people say that, like, oh, this will be kind of a free pass year. There won't be too many coaching firings.
Schools are afraid.
Yeah, no. I feel like this seemed like one of the most active off seasons in terms of teams firing their head coach.
Yeah. Because they know they have this in the bank. Like, I think these ADs and these presidents and these schools know that, like, they'll get the help they need in the SEC if they need it. The Lions ultimately went with the guy who would tear off a body part for a Super Bowl win. The guy who had a very memorable opening press conference in Dan Campbell. Just a caricature of what a football coach should be on the football field. Not exactly all in on Dan Campbell as a head football coach. But in the Lions' defense, it seems as though they wanted Iowa State's Matt Campbell. This is going to keep popping up. Matt Campbell and like Ryan Day, I see a lot when I'm reading different pieces that like NFL teams consult with Campbell and Day more than anybody else, it seems like. And that is not all that surprising based on like their coaching acumen and winning the way they do in very different ways. But like Campbell just building a perennial winner in Ames, and then you have Ryan Day obviously just having an NFL background and just running an NFL offense in college and just putting out so much NFL talent. Anyway, it makes sense, but like Campbell is going to keep getting these calls. The fact that he said no to Detroit, it's interesting. Like, that dude is happy in Iowa State, or he is waiting for the perfect job. I guess it's either Michigan, maybe Oklahoma, or Ohio State.
Well, and let's be honest, like there's those college jobs that, like, you know, yeah, it might be an upgrade from where you are, but it's not necessarily like a team that you can truly have success at. You know, there's just a lot of those SEC, those middle of the road or bottom of the SEC type schools that guys would rather stay at their school than jump there. The NFL seems like every job is better than a college job, except for the Detroit Lions. Like, that's like the one organization. Even the Browns are like sexy now, you know? Like, the Detroit Lions is just the worst organization in probably all of professional sports. So I feel like it makes sense. And I say that as a low-key Lions fan for like the last decade. I was rooting for Stafford. I was watching their games on Red Zone every once in a while. But Lions, it's a sad existence as a Lions fan. So if you're a hot coach, like, why do that to yourself? Like, especially with Iowa State, maybe this could be your best team yet with so much returning talent. Like, he could be getting maybe a better NFL job, or just, I mean, the next powerhouse that opens up in college football, like, Matt Campbell's got to be near the top of their list, top of everyone's list.
Yeah, I think that's very much possible. I'll be interested to see what his next stop is. Like, but then again, they make the playoff this year and they win the Big 12. Like, why would he leave? Like, he's built something there. The expectations are what they are. Like, he is a big fish in a small pond, and some people prefer that. And I don't blame him.
But why does anybody leave?
Right.
Money, man. That's why it's always money. There's just so much money they can throw at you. Like, money's not important until someone's like quadrupling your salary. You're like, oh, you know what? That is a lot of money. I can't say no to that.
Yeah.
I mean, Alabama took an NFL coach. Like, they plucked an NFL coach because they had that much money, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Indiana added another running back, USC Stephen Carr. What do you make of Indiana adding Stephen Carr? And also, this is a two-parter. Guess who Michael Penix Jr. was seen working out with this week?
Who's that?
Jameis Winston.
Okay. I see ya. Stephen Carr, I mean, I guess that's a solid ad for Indiana for sure. If you can get a running back from USC, he's a solid piece. I'm sure he's as good as anybody they have. No shade throwing at Indiana.
Indiana's, they're frisky. Tom Allen's got a frisky bunch up there in Bloomington, I would say.
That's how I always want my football teams to be described. Frisky.
They're frisky. You got to take them seriously. Like, that is a school now that they are at the point now where you have to take them seriously in terms of, like, you will get beat if you don't come with your A game. Like, Ohio State almost got beat. And they would have gotten beat if they didn't come prepared for Indiana last year. Like, Indiana's, what they did against Penn State and stuff like that. Like, you got to come correct against Indiana and Tom Allen's crew now.
I'm going to tell you right now, Indiana's taking a huge step back in 2021. I'll tell you that right now.
Just really laying into Hoosier Nation.
I'm still salty about the Penn State. I'm still salty about the Penn State game. Their biggest win of the season. They didn't win that game. I'm sorry. They just didn't. I'm pounding on the table over here.
I know. Like, you're not into it. Our main event for today's episode, Matt Green. Buy or sell. We're going to do some buy or selling right now. First up, you have this. UNC State champion rings for beating NC State and Duke.
Oh my gosh, man. Hard sell on this. Like, a state champion ring? Like, come on, man. Like, people already give teams enough grief about, like, an SEC East ring or something like that. But at least that's, like, a legitimate, like, accomplishment. Like, oh, you won the Coastal this year? And like we said, we're never going to know who's in the Coastal, who's in the Atlantic. I'm just not going to remember it. But a state championship ring, like, it's one thing if you're, like, I don't know, Texas Tech, and you beat Baylor, TCU, and Texas in the same year. It's like, that's like a big time accomplishment. Or maybe there's like kind of a weird year where you play Texas A&M when you wouldn't usually or something. But like NC State and Duke, like, come on. You can't. How much money did this cost? That's what I want to know. Like, I guarantee these guys sold all these rings. You remember back in 2002 and all those Georgia players, like, it was like a story they sold their SEC championship rings. Like, you're going to hear about all kinds of players selling these. Like, a state championship doesn't mean anything to these guys. Like, they won an ACC championship. Come on. Sell. Yeah. Hard sell.
Well, you did just say that they sold those too. So
That's fair.
I don't know. If there was something, like, I love the axe. I love all the different things, like the actual things. It's not a ring thing, but if they had some sort of item outside of a ring, like some sort of, like, funny thing that you want, where it was just funny, not like jewelry or anything like that, but like, or the North Carolina State champs, like, you go for this, like you said, if you run the gambit in Texas, you run the gambit in North Carolina, like if Tech beats, let's just say, Southern State and UGA in the same year, like, that is something you and I have talked about on this podcast that I think college football has really, really got to reinvest in, is that these local rivalries. Like, I don't even remember what you get for Kansas, Missouri anymore, because they don't play anymore, because college football lost its absolute mind and gave up rivalries that should have just never been given up.
Yeah, but so you're saying, like, a rivalry trophy, like, that the school has?
Yes.
Yeah, like, I'm on board with something like that. But yeah, giving everyone rings, like, a little old oaken bucket
action or something, like whatever they call that trophy.
Do something weird like that. That's what I would.
Was that Purdue,
like,
Indiana,
Tennessee, Vanderbilt, and Middle Tennessee State in 1 year? Like, just give them something. That's cool. It gives those guys something else to play for. Because if you're a Group of Five school, guess what? You're not playing for anything.
Yeah, like, I think Georgia beat Tennessee, Vanderbilt, and Austin Peay a couple years ago in the same season. So they, like, joked about, like, Tennessee State champions, but, like, you weren't there making rings for that by any means.
No. No. Do you think, what kind of rings do you think Sam Houston State got for their FCS title win?
I hope some solid rings. Honestly, I just hope it's a ring that they can wear. Like, I think that's the worst part about the Super Bowl rings, like, probably the last, I don't know, 10 years, maybe last 20 years. Like, you can't wear that shit. Like, it's, like, as big as your fist. Like, if I'm winning a Super Bowl ring, I want to be able to rock that at, like, a formal occasion or something. Like something that's, like, the size of, like, a class ring. Not something that's, like, the size of, like, four rings.
Did you get a North Georgia ring?
No, I didn't. I've never gotten a class ring. Did you?
Yeah.
You got a North Georgia one? What's it look like?
Yeah. I don't remember now.
Does it have like a blue stone or something?
I hope my dad's not listening to this because it's somewhere in my parents' house. But yeah.
Oh, man.
There's just not a reason to wear it. Like, I don't know. I just, I don't know. Did not, I do. I mean, I got the high school one. I remember that more clearly than the college one. Which naturally leads us to Kentucky, Matt Green. Kentucky's new offense, buy or sell Wandale Robinson and Joey Gatewood and the magic that Liam Cohen is bringing from the NFL to Kentucky, buy or sell?
I'm not going to sell that the new OC could make a difference, but as far as 2021 goes and Joey Gatewood being the guy, I am selling on Kentucky's offense being good in 2021. I don't see it personally.
Okay. I'm buying. I think they're going to be good, and I think they're going to be the sleeper pesky team. Like, if Florida doesn't work out and they take a step back, I think Kentucky's right there. Like, the Kentucky-Georgia game might decide the SEC East this year. I could 100% see that being the case.
Oh, wow.
Eric Gilbert will regret not just sticking with Florida in the transfer portal. Buy or sell?
He'll regret not sticking with Florida specifically?
Yeah,
I don't think he'll regret that, because honestly, I felt like he was making the wrong decision for the second year in a row by going to Florida. It's like 2019 LSU was perfect for you, not 2020 LSU when you made the decision to go there. It's like 2020 Florida was perfect for you, not 2021 Florida when you're making the decision to go there. So I think ultimately, will he make the right pick? I don't know what the right pick is, but I feel like he's going to end up staying at LSU just because, I don't know, this kid's got to have a bunch of criticism on how he's just kind of gone through this process. I feel like at the end of the day, he's going to end up back at LSU.
I feel bad. Like, clearly people are helping guide this, right? That he's just like going back and forth, and there's probably a lot of people giving him advice and stuff like that. And I don't know. I'm sure it's got to be tough. Bo Nix.
Wherever he goes, it doesn't matter. This dude's gonna be a first round pick. He's a baller.
That's true. Bo Nix as the number one pick next year. That was pointed out by Jordan Palmer, the quarterback guru.
Is this a serious Jordan Palmer? Yeah, UTEP, right?
Yeah.
Is this a serious buy or sell? Bo Nix as number one pick, like.
Well, the reason I would say it's serious is because none of us had Joey. Like Joe Burrow, like that was not a thing that anyone foresaw before he burst onto the scene. He was not lighting it up the year prior at LSU. There were questions
That's
about
fair.
What he was. So year three of Bo Nix, different offensive system this year. No Gus Malzahn. You get, which helps. Like if you are a quarterback trying to get better in your collegiate career, you don't want to play for Gus Malzahn because you get worse.
That's true. And honestly, Bo Nix, like prior to Joe Burrow's senior year, kind of had that same perception as Bo Nix. Like he's not the best passer, but he's like he's a gamer and he's like tough. Like they kind of say those same things. He can move a little bit. He's kind of athletic, you know. So I do kind of see the similarities there, but man, that's just unfortunately that roster is not loaded around him like that LSU roster was, and I just
yeah.
I do not see that happening at all. I don't want to say buy or sell Bo Nix being drafted. Like, I don't even know if that guy, I don't know.
I'm selling because I think JT Daniels actually fits this mold more than Bo Nix.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see JT Daniels like as a guy that legitimately kind of, you know, came not out of nowhere, because people who follow recruiting and everything know how big time he was. But in terms of his 2020 performance, just playing four games to potentially seeing a monumental rise kind of thing, I think he kind of fits that better. Bo Nix, they're just hoping he can be a serviceable quarterback. I feel like he seemed to kind of take a step back last year.
Yeah.
And also, he's a junior, right?
Yes, he's a junior. So I don't start as a true freshman.
Yeah, so I don't see him leaving early for sure. You think? He doesn't have. I feel like he's going to have a huge 2021 to even consider leaving early.
Saying. It's hard to say. Like, if he's good this year and Auburn makes some noise, I could see it.
I mean, who do you think gets drafted higher, Bo Nix or Emory Jones? I've seen people talking about Emory Jones being a top 10 pick next year, and I just, that's hot take central right there. Like, this guy hasn't even started yet.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's possible. I think it's possible. If Florida clicks and they win the East again, like, yeah, I think he's got more upside than Trask. But Trask's really good, man. Trask was really, really good.
Well, but Trask, yeah, it just is clearly, like, limited, like, in his raw ability. And so that's what the NFL is ultimately looking for. Emory Jones looks like he has a stronger arm, and obviously he's much more athletic.
Well,
like,
most people have a stronger arm than
yeah, but, like, he seems like he has a significantly stronger arm than, like, Bo Nix, what we've seen in, like, at least, like, limited throws from Emory Jones. But I don't know. Yeah. I thought that was a hot take as well.
Emory's got a cannon. Yeah, watching some high school tape of him, he was launching 70-yard bombs from the back of the end zone. Like, he can sling it. Mackenzie Milton, buy or sell, leading Florida State back in 2021.
I saw you write this on our show sheet, and I was wondering, what does that mean? What does FSU being back mean? Because FSU is that level of program, like, they're not back until they're winning the ACC, or at least in the ACC championship. Is that the standard?
I think back in terms of, like, we say the team after Clemson is North Carolina, Florida State, and Miami. Like, they're in that conversation, and they belong in that conversation with the next tier.
If they're just, if back is just like being ranked and being in the top 20 or so,
yeah,
I could see it. And maybe it's Mackenzie Milton, but, or maybe it's just like what Mike Norvell has done, you know, in general, just being a good coach and what he's done in the transfer portal. Like, I could see FSU taking a big step forward this year.
Well, let's go through the schedule really quickly. Notre Dame at home to kick off their season. I'm excited for that one. Jacksonville State, they've had trouble with, and Jacksonville State's good. Really good FCS program.
Did Jacksonville State beat them, or was that, like, did they go to, like, overtime or something?
That was the Ryan Perilou Jacksonville State. Who could forget Ryan Perilou?
Ryan Perilou, all-time LSU
great. I was at that game. You know what's crazy? I was at that game, Matt Green. I was at that game in the pouring down rain.
That's a random game to be at.
Well, my cousin went to Florida State, so I was there visiting him that weekend with one of my buddies, and that was the game we were actually there for. Ryan Perilou. I remember that. The person in front of me puking their brains out. I remember that. They were going through it.
A little croak at Doak.
I won't allow it. The four sleeping college football giants from Ari Wasserman of The Athletic. His list. Buy or sell this. Arizona State, UCLA, Maryland, and Rutgers.
So I'm with him on UCLA and Maryland. I'll give you those as far as sleeping giants go. Like, USC is clearly the class of traditionally of the Pac-12 and of Southern California, but UCLA does have some tradition there, and, you know, it's got some pull, you know, just being in LA playing in the Rose Bowl, like UCLA has some things going for them. And obviously there's a lot of talent in California. And then Maryland, you got that DC area. That's a pretty big time area. And you got, you know, a lot of talent comes out of that Virginia, like Hampton, Newport News kind of area. But I didn't understand Rutgers and Arizona State. Like, Arizona State seems like they've had success, like in the 90s, 2000s, they're a respectable program, but like, what is the ceiling for Arizona State? Like, I would put more someone like Colorado in there over Arizona State. Like, Colorado seems like someone who's just got a more legitimate football history. And then Rutgers, I guess it's just a New York, being close to New York City thing.
That's a geography thing.
Yeah, it's like, I don't see Rutgers ever being good. Like, Rutgers is just not a good job. Greg Schiano is going to get them as good as they could possibly be. I'll guarantee you that.
Yeah, we've seen that. Like, but and it's back to the I don't even know what to call this. The dungeon, the cellar of whatever conference they'll be in. Like, it's very easy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the Ray Rice year was like a 10-3, like... That's about as much as they can ask for. Going 10-3 once every decade or so. That might be a little too much for Rutgers to expect.
See, mine are not like Maryland, the DMV, like there's a lot of talent there, and Loxley is getting after a lot of those guys, and I think he's doing a lot there, but
and trying to be like Under Armour, like the
yeah,
the Oregon of the East Coast kind of thing.
I could see that, but I still just don't feel power there. And I think part of it too is that the Pac-12 is way more open than the Big Ten. Like, there's still a tipping point where like Maryland can't reach Ohio State. Like, I don't know if anyone in the Big Ten can reach Ohio State. I think they're in a league of their own. Arizona State and UCLA, there's like, the Oregon's good, but like Oregon does not have a stranglehold on the Pac-12. And Washington was better than them over the last 10 years. You have sturdier programs that...
Well, is that true? You think Washington's better over the last decade?
Yeah, Chris Peterson was better. He got in the playoff. Oregon hasn't done it yet.
I know. Oregon went to the national championship in the playoff. Mariota's year. That was the first year of the playoff.
Was that the first year?
Yeah, because they beat Florida State that year.
That's right. Okay, since then, they have not been. And Washington...
But they definitely took a dip, for sure. I feel like... The media, like, people have been, like, desperate for Oregon to just take a stranglehold over the Pac-12. Yes. Like, everyone wants Oregon. It's like, you're the coolest team out there. Just be good. Be the best.
Ohio State this year. Like, everyone's going to be rooting so dang hard for Oregon to beat Ohio State this fall.
Yeah, I think that was probably the biggest casualty of the 2020 season, that we missed out on Oregon-Ohio State. I was really excited for that one. So
I was excited for North Dakota State-Oregon. Like, Trey Lance beating Oregon to kick off the season would have been hilarious.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been a great look. But it's in Columbus this year, right?
Yes.
And so it was supposed to be in Eugene last year, I think. Are they making that up, so, yes. Or are they going to...
I don't know how they're going to do that.
But we need
Oklahoma and Tennessee were also supposed to play in Norman last year, and that did not happen, which bummed me out.
Really dodged a bullet there.
Well, they're still playing. I think it's rescheduled a couple years from now.
So they've already... Hopefully. Is that the second of the home and home, or they already played in Norman a few years back, right? Tennessee, Oklahoma?
No, they had them there. Baker came to Knoxville.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I remember that one in Knoxville because they made a comeback, right? Like Tennessee, yes. And then... But Tennessee never went to Oklahoma, right?
No.
Okay.
This fall.
Yeah. Okay.
They didn't do like a back-to-back coming home. It was like
that's interesting because Georgia and Oklahoma are doing the same thing. It's 2023 in Norman, and that's like 2031 in Athens. Like, it seems like a weird home and home series.
I wish they would stop doing this, dude. I wish they would stop booking this stuff 10 years out when we have no idea what these programs are going to look like. Just do it year to year. We learn this fall. You don't have to do this. You don't have to book far in advance. Like, you can just do the schedule based on the last season. Just be like, all right, now we know where
it would be cool.
Look at the blue chip ratio. We can figure
they
it out.
They literally planned Coastal Carolina BYU in like 4 days. Like, maybe not even that many.
Like, you don't have to do this. You don't have to book it this far out. Like, you should be able to adjust, and I don't know. I wish they would not do that.
I hear you.
But yeah, Arizona State, I think, is actually number one on this list. They get a lot of SoCal kids. Herm is already going after a lot of those kids. You got Antonio Pierce, who's a really good recruiter for them. Jaden Daniels is awesome. Like, they're already turning that program around. Like, if UCLA and USC don't get their act together, like, Arizona State's just right there. It's a fun school, party school. The weather's good. You have NFL team right there. You have a lot, like, it has a good fan base. It's got a good atmosphere. Like, Arizona State is absolutely on that list. UCLA is still going to be a basketball school. Arizona State's not an anything school. They're solid in everything. I guess you could say maybe baseball, but I don't know. I think
they do have a strong baseball tradition, right? Barry Bonds?
Yeah.
That's fair. That's Arizona State's definitely got some things going in their favor. I don't know how much talent is really out there on the West Coast for like that many teams to be good. Like I have to think Oregon and USC are still going to get the vast majority of the best recruits.
Well, Arizona State should beat Oregon. Like, where would you rather live, Eugene or Tempe, if you're a SoCal kid?
That's fair, but Eugene, Oregon seems like an awesome place. Like, Oregon just seems cool, you know? They just have that vibe going for them.
Okay. All right.
But also, so I noticed that, like, is North Carolina, are they too good right now to put on a sleeping giant list? Because yeah. I feel like they seem like someone who actually has a legitimate shot of kind of a team that's not a powerhouse that could legitimately kind of get into that conversation and, like, contend for conference titles year in and year out. And I think that's a team, one of those clear, like, not football traditions that kind of has a chance, I think, to elevate the perception of their program.
I think Ole Miss is there if they cheat better. Like, that one year where Hugh Freeze cheated his ass off. Like, if you get a four-year window there, I think you could really do something. I
that's
think.
Just anyone outside the – anyone in the SEC West, it's just – that's just so difficult because LSU, Alabama, Auburn are all so established, and now Texas A&M has, like, become that, like, kind of fourth power in the West. Like,
yeah,
it's just going to be tough for anyone. I think Ole Miss has a better shot than – you know, Arkansas or Mississippi State, but that's going to be tough. State,
top 10 FPI team, sir.
But that's fair. But Lane Kiffin, you're right. Lane Kiffin's sexy. You know, he definitely moves the meter. And so he seems like the kind of guy that's definitely got to move in the right direction.
Last thing quickly, Matt Green. Eric Gray, listed as the top transfer thus far. Former Tennessee legend, Eric Gray. At Oklahoma, do you agree? Do you think it's Henry Toa? Do you think it's Mackenzie Milton? Who do you agree with it being Gray? Or would you say it's somebody else should fit that top spot?
I think 24/7 Sports put out their top 100 like transfers, and they had Toa one. But I'm with you. I think I'm buying Eric Gray. I think he's going to make a huge difference. What he does running the ball and catching it out of the backfield, like, I just feel like – we know Lincoln Riley's offensive, you know, acumen. Like, he's going to figure out how to use that guy in the best possible position. I think Eric Gray is going to have a monster year. But I didn't want to rub this in or anything, but this had you looked at this list, right?
Yes.
This had to be a tough list for a Tennessee fan to look at, man. Like, number 1, 2, 7, 11, and 20 on this list are transfers from Tennessee. Like, it's just brutal. You can think about the type of team Tennessee could have had coming into next season, and that might not be their five best players, but that might be their five best players. You know what I mean? Like, that's tough.
Yeah. But that's what happens when you change programs and you get caught with the McDonald's bag of money. That's what happens, Matt Green. Well, that's all I've got this week, Matt. We got a shorter show this week, but next week, do you want to do the transfer deep dive next week? We could do that. That could be our big thing.
I'm just a little scared because I've heard, you know, you jump into the transfer portal. I don't know if we can come out. I don't really know. Do we go into another dimension? Like, I don't know how that works, you know? So I got to be careful when you mess around with that transfer portal.
That is true.
But yeah, I'm all in.
For that guy down there in Tequila, Georgia, Matt Green. You can follow him at Matt_W_Green. For myself, up here in Knoxville, Tennessee, Chase Thomas. That is all I've got. And we'll be back. More episodes tomorrow. And then college football every Thursday on this very podcast, ChaseThomasPodcast.com. Talk to y'all soon. All right. We are good, sir.
All right. Good stuff, man.
right, the Thursday edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast, Soldiers On, and I am now joined by old friend Jim Barcelone down there in the Miami area of the Miami Herald, a guy who knows more professional wrestling than myself, and I enjoy talking professional wrestling with a lot. Jim, good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
Good here in sunny South Florida, waiting for the springtime afternoon rain. I think this place is turning into Seattle, getting more rain and rain. I don't know if this is global warming, who knows, but that's either way, so what? We're here to talk about pro wrestling. Rain or not, rain or shine, better than mailman, pro wrestling will surge forward.
Well, you say that. Was WrestleMania not rained out temporarily this year?
Hey, it was a half-hour delay.
Mm-hmm.
And as I wrote, we waited a year plus to have a show with fans. What's another 30 minutes?
Did you go?
I did go. I went. Actually, I was lucky enough, too. I was able to go to the second night of the NXT show as well. So I went to the NXT show on the Thursday night and then attended both nights of WrestleMania. It was really good. Mm-hmm. They always do a great job with production. The stage setup, the lighting, all the ancillary was just outstanding. The match is really good. The crowd was really into it. Each day, wow, in the afternoon, it looked like dark times. It was so dark in the afternoon. It was, is this thing going to get in? Are they going to get this thing in? What's going to happen? But fortunately, the first night, you had the rain for that about 20 minutes, and it wasn't a hard rain. And they had it all covered, and they did a great job at just making sure that the ring was safe. Everybody was undercover. They just did a good job of just cleaning everything off the chairs when fans came back in. The second day, it was storming in the afternoon. So it was like, are they going to get this in? What's going to happen? But then by about 6 o'clock, it settled. And again, they did a great job cleaning everything up, making sure the ring wasn't wet, all that. And then they were able to just business as usual. And it was just, it just worked out. But it was scary. It was scary both nights with the threat of the rain. See, the first night, way I looked at it was, if it got postponed the first night, you had the second day night to do the whole thing, which, as you know, watching WrestleMania, when they do it one night, it's like a 6-7 hour event. It just, it's so long. I mean, fans watch and stay for the event. Fans, when they're at the show, they stay, which I'm amazed they stay so long, but they do. People watching at home make it a whole afternoon, evening event. So I was like, well, the second day they'll do that. But then the second day when you had the rain, it's like, what can they do? If they have to postpone, you know what we're going to get? We're going to get an extended WrestleMania day two on Raw and or SmackDown. So I was just glad they were able to get it both in so they weren't able to have to go to plan B or C.
What did you enjoy more, the NXT in-person event or WrestleMania?
Well, yeah, NXT was really cool because it was inside the PC, the Performance Center, and the crowd was right there. And they had it almost like a little hockey rink where they had the plexiglass up so fans were behind that and then seats above that. I just like the intimate setting,
mm-hmm.
and the way they had the giant screen and the way they had it set up was really cool. And you're sitting there, and then behind you, you've got this giant screen on one side, and then you look to the right, and there's another huge screen, and then you look straight ahead. At least where I was sitting, you look straight ahead, and you get the big skull and the entrance where they come out. From that standpoint, I liked it better, but gee, having WrestleMania return and with fans and having it at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, and what a really good job everyone did there. It was fun. It was good. I like that NXT had, I guess, well, they split it up 2 days as well, so I didn't get to see the first day. But having an event one day and having a time frame where it doesn't go too long. See, I'm all for 2-hour shows. If you have to go 3 hours, fine. But having it longer than that, I just think, oh, that's why even on Raw on USA Network on Monday nights, 3 hours. I think a one-hour show is really good. If you have to go to 2 hours, great, fine. But I think that's enough. But yeah. WrestleMania, since it was WrestleMania, that's fine. But I did enjoy NXT a little more just because of the intimate setting.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm surprised to hear that another professional wrestling fan does not enjoy 3 hour Monday Night Raws. I'm stunned, Jim.
It's just look at the numbers. The third hour usually, even with the main event, gets the lowest numbers.
My idea for that is, and something I think would be awesome just to switch, because they're already on the same show, like on the same programming. Like, just I would revert NXT back to an hour, move it to Monday as the opener, do 8 to 9 NXT, and then 9 to 11 Monday Night Raw. That is what I would do.
That would be a better solution than doing 8 to 10 Raw. And then having WWE Combat Sports Fight Night from 10 to 11.
Exactly. You don't want any of that.
Oh, I mean, something else. But as long as USA Network wants 3 hours and they're going to pay for 3 hours, they're going to get 3 hours. Yeah. And that's just the bottom line, because as we know, money rules the world and everything, including our sports entertainment / pro wrestling.
Well, a professional wrestling show that I enjoy watching every week. Well, there's two that I very much enjoy. I enjoy Friday Night SmackDown, and I enjoy AEW Dynamite. Dynamite's still number one. From you this week, who are your winners and who are your losers coming out of this week's episode of AEW Dynamite?
Oh, for Dynamite, I like what they're doing with Miro and putting the TV belt on him and letting him be. He just seems very comfortable letting him be him. I like that
getting him away from
attitude.
Kip Sabian and
he's not a he is a monster, but he's not a monster. He's not like coming across like this Braun Strowman monster type. He's got this just mean and nasty disposition attitude, and I think really he is just escalating himself so well. I like that a lot with what they're doing with him. I like what they're doing with the Inner Circle and the Pinnacle. I do like all that. And one of my favorite parts is when – has nothing to do with the wrestling. One of my favorite parts is just when Chris Jericho comes out and everybody's singing Judas. Mm-hmm. And then I like when they cut the music just so you could hear the fans finish it. To me, those moments are just so really cool to see something like that. I'm sure for him, especially since he takes so much pride in Fozzy and the music. As far as what they're doing with Moxley and Kingston, that's interesting to me. These two guys just seem so similar to me, and putting them together and doing what they're doing is really cool. I like what they're doing with the Murderhawk Monster. Are they turning him? Well, I hope he doesn't turn totally if they're doing that. With him, I just like him and Jake as heels, as true heels, and doing that. Mm. But I do like to see some. There is a difference with him now. They're trying something different with him. I like what they're doing there. There's so many things though with AEW that I do like. Mm-hmm. What I'm interested in though has nothing to do with Dynamite. It actually has to do with the new show, Rampage. Mm. So they're going to do the new show on Friday. Now we're every night there's pro wrestling. We're not even talking about all the other pro wrestling out there, but it's just every night. And it just proves to me, which I've said for a long time, you don't need those monster rating numbers anymore on TV to have a viable, successful pro wrestling show, as long as the networks will pay for it. Because that's really, bottom line is, yeah, of course they want high ratings and they want fans or top ratings, big numbers, but you don't need them. And as long as these networks will pay to have pro wrestling on, that benefits the company and the show and the wrestlers. And now we're seeing it every night, no matter what it is. There's Impact Wrestling, there's MLW, there's Ring of Honor. They're on somewhere. And then you have AEW. Now they're moving to also going to have a show on Friday nights.
I know people that watch AEW Dark in full, and I'm blown away by the people who can do that, who can watch Elevation, Dark, SmackDown, Raw, NXT, Dynamite. It's honestly, it's too much. We're getting to the point now where,
how
I'm going to
watch.
It's too much, and I understand the flip side of that, where someone might say, okay, it's too much. Well, you don't have to watch everything. It's not like you're required to watch everything.
No, you're
so
not.
So good. Right. But you also don't want to feel like you're missing out and you're not seeing the whole picture and you want the whole story.
Right.
But I'm getting closer and closer. And a friend of mine, Will Washington, who hosts RBR Weekly Wrestling Talk, he is, I believe, only watching Dynamite every week, but he's watching all the pay-per-views for WWE. Because WWE does an exceptional job of their video packages before matches on pay-per-views. They're so good and so informative that you don't have to watch the weekly programming anymore, because you can just catch up by that alone. And you're like, all right, I saw everything I needed to see. Now I can just watch the pay-per-view. Does that make sense? Because it makes sense to me, honestly.
That does. That is funny. It does. And it's interesting because I always thought when they're doing that on the pay-per-views, I'm watching it going, okay, here's a time filler and all. Imagine if they didn't have that, how much time they would save on the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
It would be, and you're right. It does lend itself, or he's right, that it lends itself to catching you up to what you missed and watching that. Because I'm always like, oh, all right, this is break time for me, where they're just rehashing, getting ready for the event and showing why they're having this match and all. But I can understand that. I really can understand that now in that point to say, hey, it's catching up for fans that can't watch all the time and see all these different segments that we're putting out there to get to where we got.
Yeah. What did you think of the Go-Go and Austin Gunn segment this week?
Yeah, they really want to – I just think for Go-Go, they're really putting a lot of stock in him. I used to like him on commentary. He would be on commentary in AEW Dark for some of the matches with Taz and Excalibur. And by the way, AEW Dark, what a fun show, because I like the tongue-in-cheek stuff. I like when they could just sit there on the commentary team and have a little fun and be sarcastic and just go with it there. It's so different than the traditional format, like an AEW Dark. Elevation is more of your traditional format. You're going to get more insight, news about the wrestlers, about the matches on a more serious tone with Tony Schiavone and Paul White, aka Big Show.
Also, Paul White's really good.
I like Paul White a lot. I think he is so multi-talented too. He's just so much that he can do in the ring and outside the ring. But I do like what they're doing with Go-Go and having this build up and building it up like that. So you do things like that. And then we'll look at the flip side, like someone like Austin Gunn. I like the Gunn Club. I think if AEW decides that they have so many tag teams and so much talent that they could introduce a 6-man tag team titles at some point.
Don't
and
you
I
dare.
Think
no
like
more titles.
Gun Club.
No, no,
Jim.
No more
titles. You don't want any more titles. But
no.
If they did do a titles, the Gun Club would fit perfectly with that.
I mean, they would. They would, but less titles. I mean, they already got... We got AAA titles appearing on these shows. We got the FTW titles appearing. Like, we got all kinds of stuff. We don't need more. We don't need more.
Yeah, Kenny Omega is a belt collector himself, so he is his own museum of belts, which will continue to grow, by the way.
Yeah. I'm excited for DMD versus Hikaru Shida at Double or Nothing. There's no way Baker doesn't come away with the title, right? Like, you cannot keep it on Shida for this much longer.
She has to have Britt Baker has done such a tremendous job that it is her turn. So I just, that's another talent that just when you first saw her, and a lot of fans didn't know her, and now she's getting exposure and time to develop and grow. Sometimes it takes a while, Ricochet, and sometimes it just happens quickly and you just go with it. And she's really done a great job for herself. But I think she's their number one women's wrestler on the roster. And that is just total package, everything. Yeah. Because the problem with some of the – when you have the international talent, Asuka is doing the best she can, does a good job at it. But when you get that international talent in, it's hard sometimes to do the – how you do the promos if you don't have a translator. And you lose something when that happens. So I just think when you have somebody there that can handle those promos, which are so important – in just garnering that attention and all. Someone like Britt Baker, she's just great on microphone. And just to see how she has embraced her persona, it's really cool to see.
I just am glad that they're making a point to let Eddie Kingston and Jon Moxley talk every week. That is an important thing. When they're discussing the analytics guy, Tony Khan, and being confused as to who is who in the Acclaimed, and like one's a rapper. Everything about it, and that opening rap from the Acclaimed was also really good, and I thought it set the tone. And I very much enjoyed Kingston and Moxley. Do you think they're the ones that ultimately take the belts from the Bucks, or no?
I don't know if they. I'd rather see a tag team that has been together take the belts from the Bucks than a tag team put together for whatever reason take the belt. It's like you have this great tag team, the Bucks. I'd rather see another great tag team that has some type of lineage, some type of history, take the belt from them. Not really. That's hard to say right now. I don't. And you put, because face it, Moxley and Kingston together is like when you put Stone Cold and Rock together.
Yeah.
You're putting two, which is fun and great, and fans will have a good time, but how long are you going to keep them together? And how long can they hold the tag titles? You know, it can't, these two guys, I mean, especially Moxley, as we know, is so good in singles. How long can he hold tag titles for and continue to do tag matches when you know this guy is like in his prime, a stud in singles wrestling action?
Well, I think you kind of have to, because you want to keep him away from Omega and everything because he came up short, and you don't want him to lose his luster. So you just keep him away from the belt collector for as long as you can, because it doesn't look good to just go down and fall prey to Omega multiple times, and you just kind of look like a goober. So I think it's good.
Short-term-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, short-term-wise, if they get the belts on them, that's what'll happen. I don't foresee a long tag title run if they do win those belts. But I just think that there are so many tag teams out there, and you have tag teams that have been. Yeah, I really would have liked to have seen SCU win the belts and sort of end it when their title run ended. But it still was well done how they all set that whole thing up and went out like they did and put together outstanding efforts. But I would have liked to have seen them win those tag titles. They're the ones that come to mind.
Varsity Blondes had some good stuff, and I like the Pillman Jr. Quote from this week when they were backstage, and he was like, his lineage is not why he got into the wrestling business, it's why he stayed away for so long. I like that. I like that point that he made.
Pillman Jr. is real. I remember him in MLW, and he was pretty good there. He needed work, but he was pretty good, and putting him with Davey Boy Smith Jr. and Teddy Hart, and he was able to learn from them, and then now making this transition to AEW, breaking off and doing his own thing and tag team action. And it's really good to see. Really good to see. There's so much talent, though. That's one thing with all these different wrestling groups and shows. When I look at it, the positive negatives. The positives, at least, even with all this TV programming and different companies, and I even mentioned NWA Power, gosh sakes, now on Fight TV, and that's another one. At least it's giving the talent places to work. So when you see somebody get cut, when WWE has to make their cuts, because let's face it, you can't keep adding people to your roster, no matter what company it is, no matter what business it is, and keep everybody and just grow it like that. There's no way. How do you have enough spots available for them? And you have 100 people on the roster, and then you have 200 people on the roster, and then 300 people. You can't do that. So you have to make cuts. At least when they are making cuts, they have other places that they're going to. And
Well, let's talk about that this week, because they had some more cuts this week. One that should have been cut a long time ago. Like, I still just cannot wrap my head around what took so long with Drake Wirtz. That should have been a goner a long time ago. I don't, and that situation looked, it was pretty ugly, and was pretty ugly for a long time. But what do you make of all the cuts that took place this week?
Just had to make them, and that's what happens. And when you see talent being signed, that's what I mean. When you see talent being signed, it's like, great, congratulations, they signed them. But you think back, well, somebody's got to get cut. If a company's adding more talent and they have the same amount of TV time, same amount of shows, and you look at the scheduling, now scheduling should be picking up a little, getting to house shows, and it's starting to get better with COVID, so we should hopefully start seeing that. But just how does any business or company hire some? Do you know any business that when there's a job opening, that job opening is because they're adding to the company rather than somebody left or got fired and they have to replace somebody? Usually that's what happens. You replace somebody to fill a position. There may be a new department developed and you have to hire new people. Mm-hmm. But more times than not, when you're hiring somebody, it's because somebody else left for a new job or they got fired. So it really never surprises me when a company like a WWE is releasing talent, because when I see the Performance Center class of 12 being signed, well, how do you justify signing 12 and not releasing anyone? Because what are you going to do? Have them sit home, collect a paycheck to do nothing while wrestler X or superstar X is busting his tail working for the same amount of money? Well, actually, that's not fair to wrestler X. It's somebody sitting at home getting the same money that he or she is getting when they're risking themselves or injury because they don't have anything for them. So you're going to keep them at home and pay them? It just to me doesn't make sense. Do I feel bad? Of course. Nobody likes to see anyone lose their job. But but from a business standpoint in the profession and any company, you're going to hire people. Well, that means somebody's got to go. So it doesn't surprise me when they make any of these cuts. And to me, it didn't really surprise me of the cuts that they made this time either. I think the one time of recent note is when they got rid of Gallows and Anderson. That's the one I was like, wow. Yeah, I know they have to cut somebody, but all the work they were doing and what they were doing with AJ, and I just thought they're really good on their promos. They're a really good tag team. They know how to get under your skin. I was surprised. That one was a surprise to me. I understood they had to make cuts, but it was the type of talent they cut. That was the one that really surprised me out of all the recent ones within the last, I guess we could say, the last year.
Yeah, yeah. But we'll see what happens, because I suspect once they're touring and once this is well behind us that they're just going to keep gobbling up talent all over again. And, like, that's something
But they will, but that's the thing. That's my point. They're going to keep signing talent, but when they do that, they got to release somebody.
Well, they weren't doing that. Remember, like, we had a long, I don't even remember how many year stretch where there were no cuts. Remember how it was a normal yearly thing?
But see, that's when I don't remember that, because I always remember after WrestleMania they always make cuts.
Yeah.
But they stopped doing that for
a long period of time. Do you remember that? Like, there was like a 4 to 5 year stretch where they just didn't do it. They just retained all their talent. They just never cut anybody. They just didn't. That there was a long stretch. That's why it was so alarming when we saw just the amount of cuts they had as of late, that they used to just not do this anymore.
I'm curious. I would love to go back and just look at that and see if it was that they didn't release anybody, or if that we haven't seen people in so long that they released them and nobody knew anything about it.
Yeah, that's a possibility too.
Or they got rid of all the Legends contracts where people are like, well, I don't know, whatever. What is that? I don't even know what that is. I can't do that. Because I still remember, I always remember them making cuts at some point, and especially when the Performance Center opened, and maybe not the first year, but a couple of years down the road, and they were bringing all this talent in now to be trained at the Performance Center, and then it's like, man, what are we going to do? And then they start making cuts. And it's just, I mean, there's so much talent at that Performance Center right now that you're like, I mean, come on, Rick Steiner's kid is there. This Parker, I don't know, I'm going to butcher his last name. The Brock Lesnar guy, yeah. Parker. And there are so many down there. Santana Garrett, who Santana had been on Impact Wrestling for a little bit. She did a couple of dark type matches for NXT, and she's worked for the big companies outside of the major ones, like a Shimmer Shine. She's went to Japan for Stardom. She's hasn't really got any opportunity yet. She's been with the Performance Center NXT for a while now that she was signed. But there's so many. I'm just picking out that was only three. There's so much talent down there that hasn't had an opportunity yet to showcase. And it's just mind-boggling. And that's why you can't sign everybody. So you're going to have, there's so much talent out there, and you're seeing it at other places. So from that standpoint, that's a good thing, because you have other places to showcase the talent.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what happens there. Are you a Bronson Reed guy? Do you like that ending to NXT this week? Are you a Bronson Reed believer?
I do like him. I do like him. It's interesting what they're doing. I think that it's interesting with WWE, because they're so international, global based. That's one of the things they do. They will put the belt on somebody. They will put the championship on somebody from another country, and it happened more when they were touring, but I do like him. I do like seeing him get an opportunity. He's very well liked in the locker room. He's one of those talents that the talent will rally around, and he's a good worker. He's an agile big man. He's pretty good on the microphone. He still, I mean, think about it, in NXT, he still hasn't been there a long time. Well, has been with the company for a while, but hasn't been spotlighted for a while. So this is a big opportunity. Did I see it this quick? No. I did see them having him in big spots, but I didn't see it this fast, happening this fast, once he was on TV and then the time it took for him to build up and then get a title match and then win the title. I didn't see it happening that fast, but I do like him as a talent. And, I mean, come on. If you work with Johnny, there's certain talent you work with, whether it be an Adam Cole, a Johnny Gargano, that you're going to look good. Those guys are going to take nothing away from Bronson, but when you have a match like with talent like that, it's going to help you immensely.
It's the AJ Styles elevation. Effect.
Yeah, there you go, the AJ Styles effect. That's an excellent point. Excellent point. When Undertaker had that match with AJ, I mean, Undertaker said in his interviews, man, he was getting tired, and it was a good thing it was cinematic, that they could take breaks and things like that, but still, working with AJ just helped him so much. To me, that's what happened here, where Johnny Gargano helped him so much.
Yeah, which is not a negative. It's you need a dance partner, and there's nothing wrong
right,
with
exactly.
that.
Right, exactly. It isn't a negative, and now we'll see. Now we'll see what he's going to do as a champion, and see if this is it too much too soon. Well, we'll soon find out.
We will. Are you at all concerned that AEW is moving from TNT to TBS? Because it seems like it's going to be mostly fine and not having the sports interruptions and stuff like that. Still They just move over a little bit. I don't think it will be all that big of a deal, but it does feel kind of, to me, like, yeah, the TNT, WCW, AEW thing was just something really cool and the callback, and now TBS is, it's fine. But do you have any strong opinions on that, or do you think it'll be the ratings will be ultimately the same?
I think the ratings will ultimately be the same. TBS yeah. does have a larger audience than TNT, but I still think the audience. I think just it's not AEW on TNT. It's not AEW on TBS. It's not AEW on Fox. It's not AEW on USA Network. It's AEW.
Yeah,
and I just think as long as they're on a cable channel or network that fans can get, and fans can get TBS, it's still part of Warner Media, they'll be fine. I don't think that matters. I think, like you said, it's a good point where, look, you have NBA on TNT, you have NHL will be on TNT now. We see what's happening. So now that the Warner Media got the contract for the NHL next season, and you don't have to worry about it. The only thing that TBS has is MLB, but MLB is Sundays. Mm-hmm. They're on Sundays and during the day. So when it comes to playoff time, then you might have to move it around, but that won't be too bad. It won't be too long. When you have Wednesday MLB baseball at night for the playoffs, then you'll have to work AEW around that schedule on for Rampage on Fridays and Dynamite on Wednesdays. But it'll be a small block. Now, I mean, next season, you'll have NBA. NBA's on all week anyway, but they're not on Wednesdays on TNT. NHL does have Wednesday programming. So I'm expecting NHL on TNT on Wednesdays. So now you don't have to, but then you have both postseasons to worry about. You've got the NBA postseason and now next year the NHL postseason with Warner Media. So on their TNT channels and other channels. So you have more to concern yourself with. On TBS, you only have the baseball. And it's summertime playoffs, so you're talking, well, actually not summertime because that's regular season, and that's Sundays. So Sunday afternoons, you don't have to worry about that. Playoff time, which will be October, November, what we got September, late September, October. I guess October is really the playoff time for MLB playoffs on TBS. That'll be the time you'll see some shows maybe have to move to other days or times when they're showing it for next year. But that's really, you got to pick your poison, so to speak. So NHL and NBA on TNT or MLB on TBS. And now you just have MLB and you'll have AEW on TBS. So it'll be more of a sports focus with TBS having just those two, and that's good. It'll make it easier to move around and switch things up and scheduling. Another thing you got to remember too, NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs almost overlap each other. So there's going to be a lot of programming on Warner Media channels next postseason for those sports. So they have a lot of channels. So plus Warner Media and Discovery now are supposed to be merging next year. So that means they're going to have more channels to work with when that happens. So if, let's even say an AEW had to move somewhere, well, gosh, you got like 25 different channels that you can get that you could put it on just in case you do have to move it off that channel if you can't keep it on TBS for that week. Hey, we're going to be, Dynamite's going to be on True TV on Wednesday at 8, if we can't move it to Thursday on TBS, whatever it is. You're going to have a lot of options with that type of merger. It's interesting because I've been following that for a while, especially when the NHL was looking, because I remember when the NHL was originally, it was NBC that was really involved in re-signing the NHL. And NBC Sports Network, NBCSN, which was where you would get your Wednesday night hockey, NBC was dissolving that network. So that's why all the talk was, uh-oh, if NHL re-signs with NBC, they're going to bring their Wednesday night hockey over to USA Network. At the time, AEW was on Wednesday nights on USA. Oh, AEW is going to have to move, or they're going to have to put them on another channel in the NBC family of channels. But then it all worked out anyway because NHL decided they're not going to sign with NBC, and And there you have it. They end up signing them with Warner Media. And then all the talk with AEW started because it was the same thing. What's going to happen now with Wednesday nights, TNT, they're going to be on there. So I just think it was good. A couple things were good. I thought it was good AEW moved to Tuesday nights.
Yeah.
Because now
you mean
you
NXT?
Can watch. Well, or, sorry, right. Yeah, thank you. NXT moved to Tuesday nights on USA Network. So now they didn't go head-to-head. And you saw the bump in ratings for both shows, which was great. And then I like the fact that when AEW announced that they were going to have Rampage as their new show and it was going to be on Friday nights, that it was going to be on 10 o'clock at night and not overlap with SmackDown on.
But are you going to watch Rampage every night, Friday night? Are you going to really do 3 hours of pro wrestling on Friday nights, Jim?
I do it on Monday night.
Yeah,
I do it on Monday night with Raw. So Friday night it will be. So usually my routine would be on Friday nights. Now I'm going to have to change the routine when that happens. My Friday routine would be SmackDown and Fox, 8 to 10. Then on the computer, I would put on 205 Live.
No, you don't.
Now Peacock, oh yeah.
No,
and
you don't.
I'd have that on the computer. But on the TV, I would have Blue Bloods. I love Blue Bloods. On CBS every Friday night, 10 o'clock.
Incredible.
I love the drama of Blue Bloods. And you know, it has not, for those that don't know, it has nothing to do with William Regal or Lord Steven Taylor or Paul Levesque.
Incredible.
The original Blue Blood. It has nothing to do with any of them. So, but that, yeah, that would be my Friday. So now my Friday night routine will be SmackDown and then Rampage from 10 to 11. I guess I'd still have 205 Live on the computer just to take a look here and there. So Friday nights, it'll be the end of Blue Bloods. I'll have to, you know what I'll do? I'll have to watch Blue Bloods. I'll have to either DVR it or watch it on the CBS app. Sometimes they show, I think they show it there as well. So I could watch it at some point, sometime. Blue Bloods, they don't have any pay-per-view, so you can't catch up. You have to watch each show on its own.
That's funny. Last thing, we'll wrap up here, Jim. Your winners and losers from WrestleMania Backlash. Who do you think came out looking the best? Or your what did you like most about the show? What did you like least?
Well, let's see. Go through all the different scenarios there. That well, Roman Reigns just you know what. I just really, Bianca Belair getting the win over Bayley. You know what? I have to, because I'm trying to process all of it and what went down and what happened. All right, so Bianca Belair getting the win over Bayley. Look, now she has a win over Sasha. She has a win over Bayley. Two of the top stars in the company. The two stars that were basically carrying the company, because you had Becky Lynch on maternity leave and you had Charlotte Flair, who wasn't back yet. So you had, and now she
beat. Do you think they're saving Becky for the in-person return? Like when the crowds are all back, do you think she would come back now if it wasn't for the Thunder and Dome? Because that's something I think. I know we know that's true with Lesnar. I think they're probably saving Becky too, right?
Yeah, I think they're saving them. I do. I think they're saving them. Yeah, to me that makes a little more sense to do it that way. And have them come, because you want that reaction. Mm-hmm. You do want that, and you know you're going to get that huge reaction. So I just think that's smart. And you don't, and with what, who they have now, mm-hmm. you have Charlotte Flair back, and it's, they have enough of,
she's been on fire,
really
by the
good
way.
Talent.
Her promos,
yeah, she has,
over the last month have just,
her promos are great. Yeah, I mean, she's great. I love this persona where everyone's jealous of me and I'm the top one and I'm the star and I'm the one everyone's coming to see and just being better than everybody else and doing it that way. She really comes across well doing that.
I mean, she'd be my favorite wrestler of all time if she would have pointed out over the last couple weeks that Rhea Ripley and Asuka just don't have chemistry and she's here to save the chemistry problem between the two of them. Like, just call it out. These two, you can't figure it out. You can't do it. I got to step in here because the fans, they can't handle those two anymore because they stink together. It's so weird that they're so bad together, but they're so great individually. I'll never understand how that works, but it goes back to our dance partner thing where sometimes
it, does.
It doesn't work.
It
the
does.
Chemistry's not there.
Right. Sometimes the chemistry's not there. You could take two really good talents and put them together, and it just, for whatever reason, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So... But I think, going back to that, I think Bianca Belair really did a really good job. And I like the Bobby Lashley. See, we've gotten so much of Bobby Lashley, Drew McIntyre, and Braun Strowman that it was as good as it was going to get. Because you know they all could just beat each other up. And they'll all take a good beating, too.
Mm-hmm.
They like to get physical. I thought that was okay. Cesaro getting his spot, I thought was good. But when you go into things, you're like... See, when Daniel Bryan was fighting Roman Reigns, there was, to me, it was like, well, you know, maybe. But Cesaro, I was like, all right, this is his spot. This is his...
Oh, Jim.
He's not going to be.
Jim.
He's not going to win.
Jim.
He's not going to win.
Roman Reigns but is not getting pinned for
exactly
at least another
mean.
Year. Like, we're
yeah.
looking at
well,
a long, long time down the line.
You know what? Yes. But with Daniel Bryan, it's the perception. It's the perception. Daniel Bryan in there, let's say, shock. Brock Lesnar beats Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
And or Roman Reigns beats Undertaker. That shock factor.
Yeah.
It's like, especially Brock Lesnar beating Undertaker, it's like, no way, no way, no way. But when you have someone like Daniel Bryan in a match, I'm thinking like you, why could they take the title off Roman? He's so hot right now. Just him and Heyman and what they're doing with Jey Uso and, oh, well, now Jimmy too. But it's just like, how do they take the belt?
Well
then
don't.
I'm thinking, you don't. You don't, and that's true. But I'm thinking, well, if they did, it would be like a one night thing or a very short turnaround of something happening.
But they
kind of
did
Roman.
That with Drew, and that
Maybe.
Didn't really do anything either.
It did, but that's yeah. but that was but yeah, but Drew wasn't as hot as Roman. And yeah. when you're he's on fire. And the thing is, but my point is that when you see Daniel Bryan there, it's like. But Cesaro is like, nah, this isn't happening. It's not. I mean, good for him. Have a good match. Do that. This will be good. But you know that the title's not changing hands at all. It's not. And you just so you look at it and like that, and it's like, oh, okay. So I sort of like looked at that going in as good for Cesaro, but bad for Cesaro too. So. That was nice.
Well, I think a lot of guys that we like on SmackDown are just going to run into this wall. Like, it's just Roman, I think, elevates you to an extent, but it's also just like there's a limitation to what Hot Axe can do on the Blue Brand right now. And then you have Jinder Mahal, who's just getting ready to lead Monday Night Raw into 2022. Like, who's not excited about that?
I guess again, the international market when it opens up again. You'll see that. The WWE is so big. I'm when this whole COVID thing starts to get better and better and better and we settle in, I see the company even taking a bigger international push than what they have.
You need to do an international push and put on a good product. Like, that will come naturally. Like, The Rock becoming an international superstar came naturally. You can just become huge in bigger markets, like Roman Reigns being big in bigger markets. Like, it's not... I don't know. I don't know why WWE does that, where they think that, like...
I think their mindset... But here's their mindset. Yeah. I think their mindset moving forward is, if we're going to be in India, we're going to need a talent from India...
You have him, Roman Reigns. That dude is already there. Like, look at I guarantee the numbers there is just, he's going to overwhelm whoever you put in there. Like, he's the biggest star there. And I guarantee you his reactions when you post in India and the content in India, that he is number one there. I would guess that it's not even close.
There are certain superstars who will resonate to different areas. That is so true. Rey Mysterio. So many fans everywhere. It's just there are certain ones. Like you said, Roman Reigns now will resonate. But here's what I believe is happening, and not just in pro wrestling / sports entertainment, is the fact that analytics are playing so much into what a company does and where it's going.
Yeah. Raw is built for YouTube. Raw is a YouTube show where they have clips, they do their segments that they can pull for 7-minute segments on YouTube, and that's it. That Raw is literally a YouTube program.
That's interesting you mentioned YouTube, because WWE's segments, Raw included, wow, the numbers.
Yep.
You think, well, people are watching on TV. They're not going to do much on YouTube. But you know what? Those segments, and they broke it up into those small segments.
Right.
They get massive amount of hits on there.
They do.
On clicks, likes, etc.
That's why they're not worried. They're going to get their views. So. Like, even if ratings are sliding, they're getting their views somewhere.
But those analytics, what's going to happen is, or what is happening, the analytics of the analytics for that country, it's going to lend itself to a talent. That's a reason why WWE opened in the UK. That's why WWE is opening in India. WWE will be opening in more places and creating more homegrown talent in those places because of what the analytics are telling them.
Yeah.
So this is not a surprise to me. It's not going to affect our show in the U.S. per se. It's just going to be more for that global interaction in that country. Like, oh, I got to think, because he was just on the main roster now, Mansoor.
Yeah.
Mansoor, they pushed him.
Your guy, 205 Live legend.
Yeah, that's true. That is true, by the way, 205 Live guy. And that was an example of the analytics of bringing him over to the country and having him shine there, but yet he's really not shining anywhere else. Then on 205 Live, he got some rub. So, and now he's on the main roster. But if WWE wasn't using its analytics and pushing that global envelope, I don't know what Mansoor would be doing right now. And it's interesting to see someone like that, because I see there could be potential for him. But we can't put the stardom on him right now that the company had elevated him to when he went to his country and wrestled. So you'll see more of that, especially when this touring starts up again and when they go to the international. And look, it's not anything new either, but I think you're going to see more of it. And I think that global presence and that signing of talent international will mirror where WWE is globally marketing. And we're going to see more of it. And it's going to be the next step in the elevation of the company.
Absolutely. Jim, what can we check out from you at the Miami Herald this week?
I did speak to Katarina, formerly Winter with Impact Wrestling,
Temptress
with WOW, and Katie Lee Burchill from her WWE days. And she is in a documentary, The Other Side of the Ring, and it is about women's wrestling. And she is one of the four main figures, Shelly Martinez and Keita Rush and Delilah Doom are the four that are featured. And three of the four are from WOW, Women's of Wrestling. And then Shelly's been all over the place. Shelly Martinez has just done a lot in the wrestling industry. So it's a pretty good documentary. So we did a video interview with Katarina, and she's in California. She's an actress. She's a writer. She has directed small budget film, and she really got into the Hollywood aspect of it. She's from Germany, also England, and she's very big in acting in the theater and just fell into pro wrestling. And she talks a little bit about that as well. But I got to see the documentary. It's out today, actually. And it's really well done, really well put together. 81 minutes, so not too long. And it was just a good inside look at what the women had to go through to become professional wrestlers and what's going on today. They really had a nice grouping of women's wrestlers to interview, to spotlight, because at different levels of their careers. So you had older veteran talent and younger talent, so you get a good mix. And that was so I did that, and also I did some MMA. I've been doing a lot of MMA the last several years too. So Bellator is a big show on Friday night on Showtime. So two of the fighters on that Bellator show train an American Top Team here in Coconut Creek in South Florida, Austin Vanderford, and also Valerie Lureda. And so I did some video interviews at American Top Team and a story on them and getting ready for their fight coming up on Friday, which will be on Showtime. And Austin, everyone knows Austin because his wife is Paige Van Zandt. And Paige was in UFC. Now she's in the bare knuckle fighting championships. And she's been on Food Network. She was on Dancing with the Stars. She finished second there. She's just done so much, and she's young still. And she even went and visited the WWE Performance Center in Orlando because Triple H and Stephanie and that whole group are interested in her, and she's interested in WWE. So if something can be worked out, who knows? Austin, on the other hand, has no interest in cooking, dancing, bare-knuckle fighting, or WWE. He just wants to focus on MMA. So did something there. And Valerie's an up-and-comer. She's 4-0. She's an actual Taekwondo master from Miami. So talk to her about her journey so far. Very young. She's a young entrepreneur. She's a broadcast major at the University of Florida as well. And it just... two good stories, two good fighters, and got, I think that basically that was it for what's coming up. I have some things I'm working on. I'm working on something with The Miz, working on something with AEW. They have their first show with fans back will be in Miami, actually, for AEW Dynamite, I should say. AEW Dynamite traveling, because yes, they have fans up in Jacksonville, but AEW Dynamite touring, their first show will be coming up in Miami when they start back on the road for their Dynamite show. And I just spoke to Jim Ross because he did something with Jim Ross used to do a radio show back in the early 90s for a radio station in Atlanta. And what they decided to do through Conrad Thompson, the podfather of podcasts, Jim Ross does JR Grilling podcast with Conrad, and Conrad does a lot of different podcasts with some of the wrestling legends, Arn Anderson, Jeff Jarrett, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, JR, what they decided to do was take the old tapes of those radio shows back in the 90s and make that their own spotlight, their own podcast, if you will. And so you can hear JR's old archive classic interviews with some of the talent back then, who were stars back then and now legends, that he spoke to, and they're making that available. So we did an audio interview with him talking about those back in the 90s and what happened, and then that was before he started working with WWE, and then some of the different interviews that he did. So keep him busy with that as well. That was something just posted that I finished. So there was a lot going on, a lot coming up, doing some more MMA. I've got some more MMA on Friday, some more interviews tomorrow to do. So there's between American Top Team, Sanford MMA, and MMA Masters in Miami, we have three well-known, world-renowned MMA training facilities where we have a ton of fighters, ton of great coaches, champions that that are in this area. They all, for whatever reason, South Florida has become a hotbed for MMA training. And there's a lot going on down here. And that was one of the reasons, too, why I've been an MMA fan for a while, but started doing more covering MMA because of just the area itself down here and just how it's grown with MMA training and fighting. So, but yeah, a lot of things going on. Always something going on every week. So just have to just keep up with everything. And Twitter and on MiamiHerald.com, we have a fighting page. Post everything there and everything on Twitter. I put everything there and even update Facebook and just keep up. And YouTube, too, as well. I do my interviews. I'll always put my audio video interviews on my YouTube channel as well. So just keep up with a lot of different things. And thanks for having me on, as always, and taking the time and letting me talk about some of the things I have upcoming as well.
Absolutely. Jim, it's always great talking pro wrestling with you. I greatly appreciate you making the time. We will talk pro wrestling again very soon.
All right. Thank you much. We'll see everybody at the matches when everyone's will start coming back. They'll have fans at matches. It's going good. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G. Because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.